Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
But we begin with the breaking news from Albany on this final day of the state legislative session. What's in and what's out as Governor Cuomo and the three legislative leaders make their last-minute backroom deals. I am joined now by Jimmy Vielkind, Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York, who is burning the candle at both ends. Right, Jimmy?
4 hours of sleep, Brian, so please excuse my unclear thinking.
Yes, I have no excuse for mine. But what's happening right now? Something?
The state Senate is convening as we speak in its chamber, and it still has to give final passage to that medicinal marijuana bill. The final language was released to the public late Thursday night and was approved by the Democrat-dominated state assembly. No big surprise there. There still are points of contention in the state Senate, which listeners might remember is controlled by this weird alliance of Republicans and the five-member independent Democratic conference led by Bronx Senator Jeff Klein. Now, one of those IDC senators, Diane Savino of Staten Island, has been the principal legislative mover on the medicinal marijuana issue. So when the bill came out last night, there were still some concerns and still some uneasiness among the Republicans in that majority coalition. And several of them said, we don't really want to vote on this in the middle of the night. We want to take a chance. We want to read the bill, digest what it's doing. We want to talk a little bit more about the potential ramifications, hence this morning's vote. Now, we don't know if there will be drama. There's always the possibility of drama, given that it is the New York State Senate. But in a very good sign, late last night, shortly after midnight, Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos from Long Island said that he would be supporting the measure. Now, Savino had said that she has up to 39 or 40 votes. There have been that many co-sponsors on earlier versions of the bill. So we do expect it to pass. But anything could happen.
And if Savino, who is one of the powerful Democrats by virtue of being in this five-member independent coalition, and Skelos, who is the leader of the Republicans, are both for it, then there would have to be a surprising number of Republicans willing to buck their leader, which doesn't happen very much in the state Senate, for it to somehow go down. Also, Governor Cuomo had been so wary of the bill that he put a lot of go-slow measures into it, for example.
If we find that there were unintended consequences and they were negative, we can suspend the program, which to me is a bottom line fail-safe provision in this bill.
By we, does he mean him? The governor unilaterally at any time could say, no, this medical marijuana thing is not working, it's causing too many people to get high recreationally or whatever, and just say, it stops now?
Essentially, yes. This is one of the things that Cuomo pushed for in the final version of the bill, and the fact that it was included should be interpreted as a win for him and for his influence over the legislative process. The exact mechanics are that either the superintendent of state police or the health commissioner would have to issue a formal recommendation and say, hey, things aren't going right. And then the governor could, you know, to paraphrase him from the press conference, go, and just have the program slowly fade away. That's something that was put in at the last minute. There's a 7-year sunset on the bill, which is something that Cuomo had pushed for. There will only be 5 licensed producers under the bill. This is another indication of Cuomo's influence.
Who are they, by the way? Who gets to grow legal marijuana in New York now?
That has yet to be determined, and I expect it will be a very interesting process of selection. But the thing that's interesting about this is the way Cuomo approached the entire issue of medicinal marijuana. Now, he's been fond of saying in recent interviews that he went first. And in his State of the State presentation in January, the governor talked about a pilot program wherein he was going to have up to 20 hospitals engage in a study program for the use of medicinal marijuana. Advocates had immediately said that this would be inadequate, that it would not allow patients in need who were not part of a medical clinical trial to get medicinal marijuana, that it would not provide immediate relief to children, for example, with epilepsy, suffering from seizures, for whom the oiled form of marijuana is thought to be very therapeutic medicine. And there are even people who thought that Cuomo did this as something of a stiff arm. He saw that there was legislative momentum brewing on the medicinal marijuana. He saw Ms. Savino in the 2013 legislative session start to move her bill along, and he wanted to make sure that if anything got done, it would either have his imprint on it or that nothing would get done this year. So there are people who are looking at Cuomo as something of a latecomer, and although we see his influence on this piece of legislation, you could just as easily argue that his influence is a representation of moved goalposts, that he was hoping for the study program and no legislation whatsoever to pass this year.
And so he, in a way, tries to take credit for it and at the same time take credit for being wary of it and cautious of it and putting in all these measures that could slow it down or suspend it, as we just described. What about this business of not being allowed to smoke it? I would say people who are not regular readers of High Times magazine don't know that it's increasingly common to vape marijuana, which is sort of like smoking and sort of not, or to ingest it. Is this, of the 20-something, I think it is, states that have legal medical marijuana now, does any other state ban the smoking of it, which is still the most common way to take in marijuana?
I don't want to say any other state. We're certainly on the conservative side of the medicinal marijuana spectrum, which is surprising because this is New York. We are a traditionally progressive state. We have a large block of progressive Democrats, both in New York City, but really at the core of both city and state politics. So there are a lot of people who are interested in why Cuomo took this approach. A colleague of mine, Laura Namias, spoke with Joe Mercurio, who's a national he's a political consultant. He usually works for Democrats. He said on the national stage, he doesn't quite understand why Cuomo, possibly, potentially, maybe someday, thinking about a national level run, why he would do this, why he would kind of take a conservative approach on medicinal marijuana. And there are some advocates, including Gabriel Sayegh of the Drug Policy Alliance, who said, you know, there are a lot of things in this bill that are very disappointing. So I think the exact fallout of that remains to be seen. I think what the governor was doing was he was aiming at the internal politics of power dynamics in Albany. It's going to be very close to see who controls the state Senate after the November elections. And Brian, I think you and I last chatted about the governor's commitment in order to secure the Working Families Party nomination that he would actively push to help Democrats take over that chamber, and that if Jeff Klein and his fellow IDC senators did not have a rapprochement with the mainstream Democrats, that they would be taken out in primary challenges. Instead of seeing sort of open warfare in the last 2 weeks of the session, what we saw was Cuomo, again, trying to be the conciliator, trying to work across the aisle, and trying to burgeon his basic political narrative, which is that he's a governor who gets stuff done. I think he's banking on people hearing about medicinal marijuana and hearing about how he, after years and years and years of discussions in Albany, actually helped broker the deal to get a law done. So the exact political fallout of that and the political signals that this sends, we're going to watch play out over coming weeks. But to me, it's an indication of Cuomo kind of walking a little bit from the left, where he was a few weeks ago to try and win that Working Families Party nod, and going back closer to the center where we had traditionally placed him.
Well, he's probably looking at where he can or can't get punished politically going forward now that he's already secured that Working Families Party nomination. And maybe he's running as a governor who gets things done. We'll talk in a minute about how many things he failed to get done in these closing days of the legislative session. And my guest is Jimmy Vielkind, Capital New York's Albany Bureau Chief, as they are trying to wrap everything up this very morning in Albany on this whole host of outstanding pieces of legislation. But before we get into some of those things that failed and some of the other ones that passed, before we leave controlled substances, they also put together a deal to combat what they see as a surge in heroin use in the state. So, Governor Cuomo, can you be unleashing marijuana at the same time that you're trying to curb harder drugs?
Well, somebody said to me today, how can you be passing a heroin bill yesterday and a medical marijuana bill today? I said, well, if this is administered properly, we're confident that only benefits will occur.
Governor Cuomo yesterday. Sorry, Jimmy, go ahead.
Well, it is interesting, and he sort of aware of the seeming irony of the situation. But heroin has been a growing problem, and many people trace at least some of the explosion of its use in areas like Staten Island, Long Island, suburban areas, to the passage of legislation called I-STOP last year. And under that bill, which was a big initiative of Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, doctors have to register prescriptions for opioids, for painkillers, et cetera. And it really made it much harder for people who maybe were seeking them or were genuinely addicted to painkillers to sort of, quote-unquote, doctor shop. And what we're hearing from many law enforcement professionals is that, well, people at the same time realized that heroin was available. It's fairly cheap, I think $6 for a dose, and not having the experience with that, people are overdosing. They're really getting into trouble, and we've seen, I believe, according to the state, the number of overdose-related deaths attributed to opioids has essentially doubled from 2004 to 2014.
This is a national phenomenon, though, right? As it becomes more restrictive around the country and more expensive to get the prescription painkillers that so many people were getting addicted to, that market is moving towards the street drug of heroin, which is cheaper.
That's correct. And the state's response has been multifaceted, and it's been interesting. One of the more controversial or probably heftier parts of it is a requirement that of what insurers will cover exactly when. So one of the problems that patients and patient advocates have talked about is that if little Johnny finds himself as addicted, he presents himself and says, I need help, I need rehab, I need to detox. What has happened is health insurance plans are not immediately jumping to cover the costs of that, even though under federal laws they are required to provide parity between surgical medical care and mental health care. So what the state agreed to do was issue a common set of criteria about the circumstances under which such inpatient treatment would become medically necessary. And they also passed a provision which would require insurers to keep somebody in a rehab program while an appeal about whether or not the coverage or the treatment should be covered is ongoing. So that's significant. There were also some harsher penalties for healthcare professionals who are found to be abusing their power to prescribe or distribute opioids. There was a public awareness element. And Governor Cuomo, Attorney General Schneiderman, and others have moved forward sort of administrative efforts. We're now seeing first responders, including NYPD officers, being trained in how to use Narcan or Naloxone is the generic name of it, a common overdose prevention drug that first responders say really does save lives and is fairly easy to administer. We're seeing that incoming students this year at state and city universities will hear about the dangers of opioid abuse during their freshman orientation. And Governor Cuomo 2 weeks ago announced that he was assigning 100 additional state police officers to beef up narcotics enforcement around the state. So this was something that was, this was, you could argue, government at its best. There was a legitimate public policy problem. There were competing ideas about how to address it. Different interest groups had different elements that they wanted to see in, that they wanted to see out. And we came up with a comprehensive package that will hopefully have some impact on the response.
Another thing that they apparently are getting done, the city, New York City, will be allowed to have a lower local speed limit than the rest of the state. And I see the Safe Streets advocates passing around emails like, we won 25 miles per hour. So it'll be 25 instead of 30 as the default speed limit around the city, unless individual neighborhoods want to make it higher or lower?
Yes. The Department of Transportation will have the ability to lower the speed limit on non-posted streets, but they will have to, under the provisions of the bill that was actually approved late last night by the Senate and the Assembly, they will have to hear input from a local community board, and the local community board will have to be notified. It's non-binding, like most things that the community boards do, but there is a noticing provision here. This bill, though, Brian, was really the subject of a very fascinating political fight. Recall that Senator Skelos, the Republican leader, has that joint control over what bills come to the floor, and he's none too keen right now on Mayor de Blasio, who joined with Cuomo, joined with the Working Families Party, to essentially call for Skelos' annihilation, political annihilation, that is. So Skelos was certainly not eager to move this bill to the floor that de Blasio, his good friend, he said sarcastically, wanted, And then Staten Island Senator Andrew Lanza ended up sort of setting conditions on the bill, saying, I have this bill. I want to have more stop signs around schools, mostly in Staten Island, mostly in the other outer boroughs. And for a while, the legislation was sort of hamstrung. At the end of the day, the fact that this bill made it to the floor is a victory for Senate IDC leader Jeff Klein. He pushed for it. He worked with Bill de Blasio and his administration to get it done. And hopefully the mayor can chalk up a win, and Safe Street Advocates, as you pointed out, are very happy.
So some of the other things, one of your colleagues at Capitol New York rounded up some bills we saw that passed, including a measure that would require sunscreen bottles to carry expiration dates. Never thought about that. A bill to legalize sparklers and other small fireworks. Maybe that'll be in place by the 4th of July. They also passed a law that bans tattoos or piercings for your pet. No cat piercing, no dog nose rings, I guess. And a law that makes it easier to prosecute employers over sexual harassment of unpaid interns. And that's got to be a good thing. But they failed on quite a bit, especially things that the Working Families Party wanted in the progressive agenda. Allowing the city to raise its minimum wage higher than the state minimum wage failed. They wanted the DREAM Act, so kids who were brought here as immigrants by their parents but basically grew up as Americans could do what? Which version of the DREAM Act was this going to be for New York?
At this point, the different versions have been, one is called thought of as the Dream Fund, where private donors would give money and that scholarship fund would be available. But I believe what the Working Families Party and what Democrats and immigrant advocates have been pushing for is one where straight-up public dollars, which are currently available under the state's tuition assistance program, would be open to undocumented immigrants.
And the Women's Equality Act, the controversial part that would have strengthened the abortion rights laws, no go. Public campaign financing, So bottom line, what did the Working Party's family get for its money here?
Well, at this point, I think that there was something of a disconnect. In political circles, there were very few people who thought that there would be instant gratification on these sort of agenda items that came up in the context of the Working Families Party nomination. And if you think about it politically, what was said was by Governor Cuomo and by others was, hey, Senate leadership, we're coming after you. So if you're in that Senate leadership, I know I would be inclined to take my hands, put them under my thighs, and just sit down. And do nothing. And you could argue that the end of this legislative session was essentially a movement on low-hanging fruit. And you could even argue that Governor Cuomo is to be commended for snatching some actions out of the jaws of what could have really ended as just a bitter crash to our legislative process.
But, Jimmy, if I was a Republican political analyst, I think I could come down on the other side and say, look, they're not going to try to go out and destroy the Republican and independent Democratic coalition leadership. They're not going to try to politically annihilate the Republican leader of the Senate, Dean Scalos, if he signs off on a lot of these agenda items. If they get through, then all the air will go out of the room to do this by turning people out of office on Election Day this year. This is a state election year. By refusing to do so many of these things and sitting on their hands, as you say, then they make themselves targets. Why is that not the way they looked at it?
The competing pressures. Many Republicans, especially those on Long Island, which is, again, Senator Scalise's power base, they're very aware that they are winning elections now as voter enrollment trends increasingly Democratic with the support of the Conservative Party. And now under New York's election laws, of course, there is a fusion voting system, and the Conservative Party provides a winning buttressing margin for these marginal senators or even for non-marginal senators. They were told, and Scalise was told in no uncertain terms by Conservative Party Chairman Mike Long, that if campaign finance came to the floor, it's done. He's not going to give them their lines. And Senator Scalise apparently figured that he would rather have Mike Long with him than the specter of having Andrew Cuomo against him. And now keep in mind, Brian, there's some history here. After this Working Families Party deal was cut, all I heard from Republicans was, well, you know, we'll actually see. For people who don't know the nitty-gritty of state politics, it seems ridiculous that getting a Democratic governor to commit to elect Democratic candidates is any sort of a concession. But people who do follow the process know that Andrew Cuomo in 2012 and arguably in 2010 did not agitate aggressively to have a Democratic state Senate. Again, Cuomo enjoys playing the role of Solomonic centrist, and if he has a split legislature, that is to say, having Democrats dominated by New York City Manhattan Speaker Sheldon Silver, on the one hand, not going anywhere, it behooves him to have a sort of counterbalancing force of Republicans or a Republican IDC-allied chamber. So there are many people, myself included, who are very skeptical as to what, if anything, Cuomo is actually going to do here. And so for those reasons, I think Skelos made the calculation that it was better to sort of stick to his base, stick to his guns, and hope that this threat too shall pass.
Very interesting. And keeping New York safe for deep-pocketed corporations and unions influencing Albany, I guess Mike Long of the Conservative Party, with no public campaign financing since he made that such a bottom line, and the Republicans need that extra line, the Conservative Party line, to run on in so many cases. And there you have it from Jimmy Vielkind, the Albany Bureau Chief for Capital New York, burning the candle on both ends, along with the legislators who are up early again trying to wrap this all up today. Jimmy, thanks so much.
Brian, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.